For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
I found an interesting op-ed at the Washington Stand, which is a fairly new-ish news and commentary source from the Family Research Council. And FRC President Tony Perkins wrote an article called "New York Judge: The Time Has Arrived to Legalize Polygamy." So here's the question, because I'm going to go through this a little bit. I actually think this is something that's coming. At least the debate is coming. Illinois, yes. Missouri, probably, you know, lower jurisdictions as well. Should the law, should government limit marriage, legal marriage, licensed marriage to just two people? I mean, we've already expanded it from one man and one woman to, you know, two people of any whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a renewed push to say, well, if you recognize that outside of the Judeo-Christian tradition, because it's fair and you can't constitutionally or legally deny two men or two women, you know, and the right to get married, well, then why would you limit that there? There are people who believe that there are three people in a marriage, especially if you've got a bazillion different genders. You can have one of each.
Feeling this way.
Right.
No.
So if you go to WashingtonStand.com, you can find this right there. Matter of fact, what happened is there's a court case in New York where it has to do with like an apartment, and somebody died, a man who was gay died, but his legal spouse lived somewhere else, and he had another man living there with him, and he says, "Well, I'm part of the arrangement, but I wasn't allowed to be part of the marriage because of the laws that limited it to two people." And so the judge, I think, ruled in that guy's favor that he would be allowed to renew the lease as though he were a spouse.
Right.
And because in New York, I mean, when somebody moves out, you can jack up the rent. Mm-hmm. You know, you just can't raise it a whole lot when they're still there because of rent control laws.
Right.
So there's a lot at stake right there. And in some places, there are actually two cities that I know of, one in Massachusetts and one in California, that took steps to legally, locally recognize multiple polygamous polyamory marriages as well. Now, remember, when the big gay marriage push, which was, gosh, I don't know, 20 years ago?
Easily.
Something like that?
Yeah, a little over that maybe.
There was a lot of gloom and doom, slippery slope arguments happening. So are they happening?
I was one of those slippery slope argument people. Because primarily the arguments that were presented in favor of the redefinition of marriage was, they were based in. I was like, well, what about somebody who lives with somebody else? And, they should be allowed to inherit. They should be mm-hmm. allowed to go into the hospital as a family member. They should, basically a lot of contract law type of stuff that is automatic with a marriage mm-hmm. license mm-hmm. is like, well, it should be automatic for all these other people. And there is a kind of legal argument there. And I've actually made that definition to, argument as well. That, there should be some sort of legal arrangement available from a state recognition sort of side. But by redefining the term, you change the game entirely. And you make all of those same arguments that you could make for gay marriage available to every other version of marriage that has existed in human history. So that's kind of where the slippery slope argument came in. And here we have it actually starting to play out.
Yeah, that's what's interesting is at the time, people said, oh, well, if you're going to do this, then you're going to eventually do all these other things. And the proponents of gay marriage are like, oh, stop, Well, now they're the ones saying, hey, we did this, so we should be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact same people. You're saying
I worked in a futon store a long, long time ago, and this was before all this, and the one guy came in and said, listen, my partner has a lot of furniture here, like $3,000 worth of furniture here, and I need to get it out. And I said, well, I need his permission. And mm-hmm. he said, well, I'm his partner. And I said, I'm sorry, but by law, I can't give it up to you at all. And it was – I felt bad for him. You know, mm-hmm. There was nothing I could do. I mean, I really couldn't. I could have gotten in big trouble if I'd have done that. And he had to walk out, you know. Yeah. But this whole thing is a even major slippery slope going to happen if you can say, well, yeah, that 15th person over there, that's my other partner.
So here's, let me say something that I think probably will rub some people the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do that sometimes. Can you or should you separate out the religious observance of marriage? I mean, every church I've ever been a member of my entire life recognizes one man, one woman, nothing else. That is, to me, the correct definition of marriage. When it comes to government, though, when it comes to the law, does the government even have any business involved in marriage at all?
No. I think
I'm a little surprised to hear you say that.
As it stands, and this is kind of like the libertarian sort mm-hmm. of thing coming out, because people ought to be able to arrange their family, you know, however they want.
Or the contracts, anyway they want.
It's a contract, essentially. People should be allowed to make contracts that recognize rights and responsibilities with any person or number of people that they want. I mean, basically, a company is just a group of people who recognize their rights and responsibilities in relation to one another. I think a family kind of works the same way. It's just that there are things that are recognized historically as automatic, you know, that the government recognizes, like, okay, we understand that because this thing exists, because marriage pre-exists the government, because that thing exists, we're going to recognize your legal status as it relates to that relationship. So they recognize the automatic inheritance. They recognize the familial relationship, even though, you know, they're not blood family, you know, that kind of stuff. So in the same way, the government should be willing or capable of recognizing all sorts of legal arrangements. But the thing is, the government can't redefine marriage as an institution because government didn't define it in the first place.
Hmm.
You know, they didn't make that. They didn't make up marriage, so they don't get to define what marriage is.
The first marriage licensing laws in this country, and this is going to be right around the Jim Crow era in this country, because up until that era, up until the early 1900s, you wrote it in a Bible, the preacher signed it, and you were married.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because, well, everybody saw you got married at the church. You know, Abraham Lincoln and Mary Todd Lincoln didn't have a marriage license. They got married.
And then the government recognized it.
And it was
some
recognized,
level.
You know, that was, you know, I remember when Rachel and I went to get our marriage license in Clayton at the county headquarters, and we were laughing, kind of irritated, because both of us have enough of a libertarian streak. I'm like, yep, we're here to ask the government's permission to fortify our love officially in a marriage, you know. But there are arguments now, so now let me go to the other side and just play the arguments here. Is that, but the traditional family unit depends on a stable marriage, and that is a foundation, or one of the most important, if not the most important foundation of actual society and culture. And I think that's actually true.
Yes.
So somebody says, well, government has an interest in promoting that. Well, maybe, but does still government, when we look at what happens when we let government take it over from the church, look at where we are now, because with government, you do have to apply the rules equally to everybody. And if you're an adult and you want to make contract arrangements, I don't know that the government has any business telling you can't, because the majority of people don't like it.
I imagine part of the problem is that when, you know, once the legal recognition of a marriage kind of came into play, now the government had an interest of putting marriage on all of its documentations. Mm-hmm. You know, it and then they started giving benefits or certain recognitions mm-hmm. for yeah. marriage. So now it's not just it went from being a religious recognition to a government mm-hmm. Position kind of thing. So now, and that's where
equality,
that's where the equality legal argument comes in, because it's like, well, I should be able to be recognized as you know, having rights mm-hmm. on some level, right?
Yeah, so. And with property rights and other things, I mean, tricky, slick. Yeah, it is, but. You know, it can be done. Did we make a big mistake when we decided to default to government to regulate marriage?
Yes, absolutely.
314-912-1019. You got some thoughts on this? Maybe we should post this article on our social media. You want to do that, Gabe?
I will do that.
Okay.
It's going to be a paperwork nightmare for the government. When you have 15 people signing up for
That's
marriage.
Right. I was thinking about that, too. I'm like, okay, what happens to Social Security benefits?
147 benefits.
Right. Yeah. And that's not just Nick Cannon. All right. 314-912-1019. Got some thoughts on this. Should government be involved in regulating or licensing marriage? Tony Perkins from the Federal Family Research Council says they need to get back to only one man, one woman. I don't know. What do you think? We talk about that. Also, gas prices going crazy again, right? Talk about it all at 119-941 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Okay, 7:35, we're going to get a first-hand account of what's happening at the southern border. Virginia Allen from the Daily Signal going to be with us. She's got a recent article she posted about what she sees at the southern border. So we're going to talk to her. At some point, we're going to get to this gas price thing. They're going up again, and you know, Karina Jean-Pierre was asked about that by Peter Ducey. And I mean, I'll let you hear the audio, but you know, her answer was something along the lines of nuance, and it was kind of that. So we'll get to that in just a minute. All right, it's 7:22. I'm Mike Ferguson with Gabe Pfeiffer and Ken Williams. All right, interesting one. Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council posted an article at the Washington Stand, washingtonstand.com. And, Gabe, we got that up on our social media now, right?
We do.
So Facebook and Twitter, we've got his article, his op-ed up on that. And he's saying that you've got multiple cities, couple cities now in the country, and a judge in New York now simply saying, well, if marriage needs to be recognized by government by any two people, then why not 3, 4, 5, 6? I mean, why shouldn't we allow multiple marriages or polyamory or polygamy or whatever you call it? And so the question is from a government and a law perspective, is there a reason for government to restrict marriage to two people? Or should government just simply be out of the business of marriage? What's your take on it? 314-912-1019. Rebecca's going to lead this one off. And Rebecca, you're on News Talk STL.
Hi. You know, whenever you talk about the government getting out of the whole thing, I have heard some years ago that elderly Christian couples were particularly getting married in a religious ceremony, but they were leaving out the legalities and the government because then it didn't affect their benefits. And some people say, well, that's not marriage at all, but if it's recognized in the eyes of God, do you really need the stamp of approval from the government?
I think that's an excellent point, Rebecca.
That's a great little nuance to it.
That's an excellent point. If two of my friends said, we're not, and I actually know some people, like, we didn't go to the government to get a license, but we went to our church and we got married. In my eyes, if the, you know, if the church, you know, did their what they're supposed to do with their faith, I say they're married, whether the government recognizes it or not. And there would be somebody, Rebecca, and I think you bring up an – I mean, seriously, that's a really good point, is that some people would say, well, it's not real unless the government says so. That's a problem with our – with so much of our society is unless government endorses it, then it's not real or right or true.
That's
when
gross.
In the other you know, perspective should be when it comes to things like marriage and family – your basis should not be government or other things. And somebody may even argue those elderly couples you just described that they're cheating the system. I don't think they are.
No,
at all.
I don't think so either.
I say good for you. Good for you, Gertrude and Harold or whoever.
Well, they earned their benefits.
Yep.
They worked all their life. They're as, you know, as worthy of getting them as someone that's, you know, but there again, we're talking mm-hmm. a little on the libertarian side, but isn't that really what our government was, our nation really was the pioneers? And from what you said, they had a Bible, they wrote it in. The preachers and all the people in their town knew they were married.
Yeah, precisely. Hey, that's Rebecca, right. Appreciate you being on the program. I mean, she's just talking about the marriage penalty.
Thanks, Rebecca.
In a little different way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally called the marriage penalty.
That's the reverse argument. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, who we got here?
Yeah, we got Peter back.
All right,
hey, Peter.
Hey, Peter, you're on News Talk STL. Right. What do you think?
Morning. So, firstly, I think looking at it as from the more conservative side, as the family being the building block of society, in that instance, government has an interest in basically encouraging more marriage and more family. Mm-hmm. And marriage being between a man and a woman. And traditionally, the definition of marriage has been, you know, one man, one woman, and the primary purpose of marriage was the procreation and education of children.
Yes,
that's all correct.
So I think that with that in mind, government does have an interest to encourage marriage.
Okay, so...
And that, I think that's what the tax benefits, and that's why licensing is a thing, and that's originally why it became a thing.
Yeah, so...
So that they could encourage it.
So here's one of the arguments that we hear from the left on this when that point has been... And by the way, in my personalized marriage is one man and one woman. And mm-hmm. to me, that's a separate question as to what the government role is going to be in this. But that's how right. I look at a legitimate, valid marriage. But somebody, Peter, is going to say, but you know what? Two men can provide a loving home. We've got tens of thousands of children in foster care. Why should government treat them different?
Because there have been several research, or some research done on it. And I think that argument doesn't necessarily hold water when you look at the psychological effect on children being raised without a mother and father. Like, there is something lacking there. And that's not to say that you can't have, I think the Daily Wire had an argument on this the other day that basically that's not to say that, two men couldn't provide something better than the foster system, but that's not the ideal.
Right.
And there is going to be something lacking there.
Yeah, I think even in my household, there are things that my wife supply to my two daughters that I can't, and vice versa. I mean, right, contributing, yeah. I'm saying emotionally and all that.
Right.
Yeah, I think the data pretty much speaks for itself that this traditional two-parent home is the ideal situation for the rearing of children. I mean, all the data says right. that. So I do agree that the government has a role to play in terms of promoting that. But I think the question then becomes, well, how? How? And then how far does that go? And where do we put the guardrails up so we don't get what we're getting?
Or do you, in this case, simply allow something outside of the norms, even if it's unstable.
Right. Yes, that's true. From the libertarian standpoint, right. because, you know, regulating people's behavior is not the role of government.
Right.
So, you know, stuff like that.
Well, I mean, it kind of is. I mean...
Well, yes. I mean...
To a limited degree.
To a limited degree.
And I think with going back to the whole idea of family being the basis of all society, I think they do have a say in how they regulate that. And I think it wouldn't be outside even the, I think if you look at it from a certain point of view, that it wouldn't be even without outside of the libertarian view to regulate that.
Interesting stuff.
Because it is so important to society.
All right, I've got an information break I've got to get to. Hey, Peter, really appreciate that. So we had the libertarian view, had the more conservative view, and you can go to Newstalk STL on Twitter. You go to Newstalk STL on Facebook. Keep that conversation going.
Weigh in.
It's right there right now. I'm really curious what everybody says. Eva sent us a tweet saying the stable family unit argument, does government giving permission actually provide a stable base for pretty much anything?
Well,
there you go.
Fair point. All right. Speaking of unstable, how about let's talk about the southern border? Hey, how about that segue?
Hey,
look at that.
Noise.
I am a trained professional. Don't try this at home. We're on your podcast.
Noise.
Virginia Allen from the Daily Signal is going to be with us, and she's going to give us a firsthand account of what she sees when she is at the southern border. That's coming your way about 7:34 right here on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Election year, we talk about the border a lot. Obviously, hot button election topic. But if you notice that we tend to talk a lot about the numbers, and we are overwhelmed by the numbers, even when there's a massive human tragedy like, you know, the dozens of illegal immigrants who were trapped inside that 18-wheeler's trailer, it was in some cases the numbers. But it's not just about the numbers. The numbers should tell part of the story of the what's happening on a human basis when illegal immigrants come across the border and affect the lives and the communities all over the country.
Virginia Allen is with the Daily Signal. If you ever listen to her podcast, you've heard her. And she joins us right now. New article she's got posted. What I'm seeing on Texas's border with Mexico. And Virginia, appreciate you being on the program here. So let's start with the basics. When you're saying what you're seeing on Texas's border with Mexico, we're talking about a firsthand account we're about to get, right?
That's right. Now, it's a pleasure to be with you this morning. And that's right. I spent 3 days down on the southern border last week. I was in Del Rio, Eagle Pass, and Kinney County. Also visited, hung out outside a migrant processing center in San Antonio for about half a day. And it was really interesting to talk with the folks that are being affected literally on a daily basis by illegal immigration right in their own backyards.
Good morning, Virginia. Gabe Pfeiffer here. So what are the kind of worst experiences that were described to you about what's going on down there?
You know, I think for so many individuals, they're just living in a constant state of fear. It's just always in their mind that, you know, what if today's the day that, you know, for a rancher, if, for example, I visited a ranch owned by former judge of Valverde County, Laura Allen. Her ranch is 16,000 acres, borders Mexico. And she said, you know, every day she just kind of wonders if today's the day that, you know, she'll find a dead body of an illegal migrant on her ranch, or, you know, she won't go anywhere on her property without carrying a gun. And it's because of those safety concerns, because she knows that there are illegal migrants constantly crossing through her property. I spoke with another woman named Teresa Esther, and she lives about a mile from the border in Del Rio. She said her house at night looked like Fort Knox is the way she described it. She's had to put up so many lights, put up a fence, buy a guard dog, all to try and have some sort of sense of peace in her own home. Because again, there's constantly illegal migrants running down her street, running through her backyard, you know, Border Patrol will chase them through her property. And this is just the reality that these people have come to have to deal with.
Yeah, we talk so much about the policy aspect of it and the politics aspect of it. But when you're talking about a complete stranger, who knows who they are, who knows why they're on the run, running through your backyard, this takes a very different impact to the people who are living this. And when we talk about the policy stuff, we hear a lot about, but these are just asylum seekers. You know, these are peaceful people. People have a right to migrate. When you were talking to the folks on the border, did any of that come up as far as the arguments being made basically for a pro-illegal immigration policy, which is essentially what we have right now?
You know, I asked folks in these counties, I said, is there division among Democrats and Republicans in these communities on what should be done about illegal immigration? And they said, no, down here, everyone's pretty much of the same mind that we need to secure the border. Because like you say, you know, there are obviously many quote unquote good people that are coming across the border, that are seeking asylum, that want a better life. We are a nation of immigrants, and that's a beautiful thing, but there has to be a process in place for that immigration, because if we don't have a border, then are we even a sovereign nation anymore? And also, when you have so many migrants coming across, even if they are good people, that makes it so much easier for bad actors to come across, because Border Patrol is continually pulled away from their stations on the border to process these sheer numbers of individuals who are coming across seeking asylum. So they're pulled away from the border. They can't guard the border anymore, which means it provides so many opportunities for criminals, for drug traffickers, for human smugglers who have ill intent to easily make it across the border.
Quick follow-up question. We're visiting with Virginia Allen from the Daily Signal. Do the folks who live in the border communities that you are at, can they tell a difference between those who come to the country illegally and those who went through the process legally?
I think it is very obvious, because when you have those going through the process legally, they're often, finding jobs in the community, and they're not afraid. For one, they're not afraid to be apprehended, they're adjusting more easily, I think, into society, and they're paying taxes versus individuals who either are coming in illegally and claiming asylum, or who don't want to be apprehended, are really just you know, even if they have the best intentions in mind, they're really creating a state of chaos, not just in border communities, but truly all across the country, because these individuals aren't necessarily staying long-term in those border communities. They're being bused or flown in to the interior of the United States. So, you know, we hear people say it, that every community in America is becoming a border town. Well, it's really true when you have thousands, if not tens of thousands, of illegal migrants ending up in cities across America and just sort of disappearing. And they're not appearing for their asylum hearings. And they're sending their kids to our schools. They're, you know, using our medical system, and yet they're not paying for any of that.
You know, one of the things I've noticed is that among legal immigrants, they get particularly triggered basically by the idea of people coming in illegally and being able to acquire all these benefits and things like that. Did you experience the same thing when you were talking with people down there?
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating. I got a chance to speak with a couple different illegal migrants outside of a processing center in San Antonio. And, you know, it was interesting to kind of hear their logic and their reasoning. And they all said that they were coming to America because they wanted a better life. They wanted more opportunities. But one gentleman, you know, he told me, he said, you know, I know I came illegally, but you know, I'm really glad to be here. And I think that there's this thought process of, you know, if I can just get into the country under the Biden administration, I won't be deported. I'll just get to stay and I'll get to build a life. And what a dangerous narrative, I think, to be sending, for one, for, you know, the sovereignty of our nation, to essentially have sent a message to the world that there is no border. But then also for these illegal migrants, because it truly is a really dangerous journey. And many of them are taken advantage of by cartels along the way. I spoke with a sheriff the sheriff of Valverde County, Sheriff Martinez, and on his desk, it's sobering, on his desk, he has a binder that's full of photos of individuals who have been found along the border in his county who passed away, and who either drowned in the Rio Grande or who died of heat exhaustion. This is a dangerous trek. And for the Biden administration to just be saying, come on, that is not only a major threat to the people of our country, but to these migrants themselves.
The article at the Daily Signal is called What I'm Seeing on Texas's Border with Mexico. I just got a minute or so left visiting with Virginia Allen. For the folks who are dealing with the initial brunt of this, what do they want to see changed to fix it?
Yeah. First and foremost, they want to see the border secured. They want to see that Biden administration is not letting anyone and everyone just come across. They want individuals to know that, you know, if you come across illegally, you will be deported. And if you're an asylum seeker, that you're going to have to wait outside of the United States for that asylum claim. And over, as I ask individuals, you know, what is your message to the American people? They said, come and see. They said, come and see what is happening here at the southern border. See for yourself what is going on. And of course, we know that most of the Biden administration hasn't done that themselves. They haven't gone to the border to actually look at the situation of what is happening. But you know, I've been hearing for years about what is happening at the southern border. This was my first trip down there. And honestly, it was incredibly eye-opening to see firsthand, for all intents and purposes, we don't have a border right now. And to see how much of a well-oiled machine illegal immigration has become under the Biden administration and because of the Biden administration's failure to secure the border.
All right, Virginia Allen, DailySignal.com. Look for the article, What I'm Seeing on Texas's Border with Mexico. Virginia, thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
And you can also find Virginia on Twitter, Virginia_Allen and the number 5. But we've already tagged her in our Twitter post as well. So check that out. All right, just ahead, 4 minutes right now. Let's talk about the other kinds of possibly illegal aliens. Do you even think they're real? We'll talk about that at about 7:50. The guys are looking at me like, what the heck are you talking about, Mike? I'll explain at 7:50, 101.9, 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Here's a little bit of breaking news. Cori Bush embarrasses the St. Louis region again.
What else is new?
She doubles down on her hatred of law enforcement. We'll talk about that at 8:05. And yes, I have the actual audio clip from her to let you hear directly from the gentlewoman from Missouri. We'll do that at 8:05. 8:20. The interesting look into how some, I'm going to use air quotes here, public health officials around the country were dealing with monkeypox.
Monkeypox. No, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
What do you think they What do you think they prioritized? Actually getting the information out to everybody in the public in order to try to slow down the spread, or worrying about embarrassing the gay community, particularly the gay men community?
Yeah. I'm going to take a guess.
I know that's a cliffhanger. It's a cliffhanger, but you're going to have to hang on until 8:20. I'll tell you what's going on. And it just shows you that, quote unquote, public health is really just another version of politics. Public health officials are just politicians. That's all it is at this point. No more, no less. And if your cousin works at the Department of Public Health and you tell me, no, they're really there to help protect our health, they're just a political pawn. That's all they are. Sorry.
Used to be, though.
Yeah, your cousin can hate me. I don't care. All right. New poll, new survey has come out. Now, I try to separate between polls and surveys because political polling is basically nonsense at this point. But interesting surveys come out from time to time. And you can find this one on YouGov. In a new survey now, 57% of Americans, so a clear majority of Americans, believe that aliens probably exist. And I'm not talking about the illegal ones running across the southern border. I mean like spacemen, you know, Martians. What do you want to call them?
Extraterrestrials.
Extraterrestrials. 57% of Americans now say, yeah, there's probably, you know, there's probably other civilizations and space aliens out there. Only one out of four, only 25% of Americans say, no, doesn't exist.
Well, that 25% is making a big presumption because how would you know?
Well, how do we know that they're there?
Well, that's the thing. I think the way you, at least the way you said it, it said that they probably.
Yeah. So here it is. Let's see here. 57% of Americans say that aliens definitely or probably exist compared to 25% who don't believe that aliens exist. 19% of Americans aren't sure. Now, you go back 25 years and you go back to what, 1996. Is that almost 26 years? The similar poll found that only 20% of people believed that there really were aliens out there. So we're talking more than double, almost triple the number and the percentage of Americans who think that there are there are other beings out there other than us.
I think the release of that UFO footage, I think, helped push this over the edge here. I mean, it had been creeping up, I think, over the years for a good long while, I think, as people got a little more used to the idea, you know, kind of got a little more familiar with the math behind it and said, oh, you know what, that math kind of works out. The universe is a really big place kind of thing. But at the same time, I kind of fall into I don't know category as opposed to probably yes. I mean, I stand firmly on that fence between those two.
So I so absolutely it's a believe. Maybe?
So it's a definite maybe or not.
Taking ambivalence to a whole nother level there. All right, what do you think, Ed?
I absolutely believe there are other intelligent life out there. I mean, when you consider the billions of stars in the different in our galaxy alone, and then the hundreds of billions of galaxies that there are around the universe. I mean, unless they can, the problem we're going to have is that they can't get here. You know, the simple fact that they're so far away, they just can't get here. So all these different things that we see flying around in the sky, I'm just not sure, unless they came up with some way to fold space into time and everything. I don't know how they could get here.
What do you think that, the spacemen and women or whatever space genders are?
The space genders.
Got to go there.
Probably about like five or six of
them.
Yeah.
So what do you think they would say if they landed right now and walked off the spacecraft? What do you think that they would say right now? I mean, I could imagine them all looking around and going, $4 for a gallon of gas. I'm out of here. You know, okay, that's one. What other things would you think they would say?
I think it would be something along the lines of whatever the alien equivalent of a Steve Irwin nature documentary would be. So it's like here we have the humans in their natural habitat. You know, that kind of thing. Because honestly, if you're capable of you know, spanning the vast distances between the stars in order to get here to observe, I imagine you're basically on a nature walk and you're kind of observing things. And I'm not sure you would actually consider us a civilization yet.
So you don't think they'd say like, hey, don't mind us, we're just checking everything out before Putin blows everything up? Then we're, you know.
Well, if I were them, I would keep my distance and I would watch like, you know, like a person watching an ant colony. You know, it's like, hey, look, they think they're doing something.
They could also walk off and be like, why does everything smell like pumpkin spice? Explain this to us.
Yeah, if they
that would be.
Oh my gosh, there so many funny observations I think would come from humanity. I was like, I kind of envy the you know, supposed ability of an alien species to be able to kind of view us from an exterior point of view, from a non-human point of view, and just kind of basically have as close to an objective observation of humanity as possible. I wonder what they would think of the way we do things.
I mean, this is campaign season. They could probably say, we were searching for intelligent life. Sorry to bother you. We'll be on our way now.
we found nothing. Nothing.
We are out of here. Oh, man. All right. Cori Bush gets on TV and embarrasses us. Yet again, I'll let you hear directly from her at 8:04 right here on 101.9. And 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.